All right, Steve, we are back with another episode of the Work Week After Hours. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. I'm on the mend here a little bit, as you know. A little shoulder procedure the other day, but I am I'm feeling excited about how that's going to land me, and looking forward to the holidays coming up soon.
Yeah, you got you surprisingly not because of your age, but because of the procedure, you have surprisingly good energy. I don't think if anybody's watching this, Steve's not going to jump up and do any fast moving movements, but you're certainly you're certainly on the mend. So that's good. So it's been a whirlwind last couple months for you. You've literally been all over the world, and back. So it's an interesting time, and it's a good time for us to crank out the final episode here of 2022 and kind of dive into a topic that you and I both obviously deal with on a regular basis, and that's leadership.
Yep.
And, you know, you had an interesting insight. Most people know who are loyal followers. We don't do a whole lot of prep coming into these things, and I think that's what kind of makes this really interesting is we come with some fresh kind of off the cuff ideas, and you had mentioned maybe us diving into or starting to peel back the layer of the state of leadership and some of like referencing some of the current events that have happened with leadership and those things.
Yeah, I think, as you say, the plate's been full with all kinds of activity, whether it's Twitter, whether it's FTX, whether it's some big mergers that are going through. And I'm just sitting back going, wow, you know, I still wonder whether this train is heading in the right direction, if people feel more confident in leadership, whether leaders are feeling more capable, because it just has been a constant set of new challenges from, you know, for the last 3 years, pretty much again and again. Yeah. And not just, you know, hey, I haven't had the supply chain problem before. We haven't had, you know, work from home before. We haven't had this whole hybrid argument before, but just, we haven't had a workforce think so differently about work before. We've had immigration changes, right? People, you know, countries closing immigration, and that has dramatically affected their labor pools. Countries like Australia declaring essentially a talent state of emergency, you know, and it's just caused all of us to have to reframe and take on new things. And I'm just sitting here wondering, you know, maybe it's worthy of us just kind of going through and say, do we, you know, are there signs of life that are encouraging for us?
Yeah. I'm curious. So I want to tap into your experience a little bit. Obviously your time at, we'll call some really big companies like Cisco, EA and LinkedIn, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. You were in leadership roles in those positions, stressful times, those things. Do you remember a time when it felt like, because right now, let me ask this a different way. It feels like so many non-work related things are impacting the place of work, how we work, where we work, the leadership, how our leadership's dealing with things. Do you recall, like, I know you're not in the role now, but you certainly have a view and you're talking to leaders every day. Do you feel like that is like it's been more impactful and it's more intermingling into the workplace? Or do you think this has kind of always been a thing and social media is just kind of showing that it's a thing?
Oh man, I don't think we've ever seen anything of the scale of magnitude and the multitude of things. If I think through in my lifetime of working, the things that really shaped work dramatically were laptop computers. Okay. Affordable computers that you have at your home, facilitating you doing work. The internet, obviously. Mobile phones, not so much. I mean, it's been a good communication to really affect things like, whoa. And then being in tech for the dot-com bubble bursting in 2001, that was like, holy cow. Like everyone, companies downsizing and laying off, like, and companies going under like crazy, right? The whole investment thesis was just broken, right? Now we have all those things and more with the crypto crash, with, you know, the pandemic, the work from home, the number of people quitting without having another job at a higher rate than we've ever seen before. Now we're seeing layoffs again in technology. I mean, tech is always about having the best team and you're hedging that you're going to continue to grow, and they're always going to be talent heavy because, you know, it's always hard to find good talent. So now they're like, woof, don't see a good landscape in front of us. We're going to have to trim the ship, which is the biggest expense for most companies, particularly in tech, it's people. So nothing compares to this, you know, and I can't, you know, if you're thinking technology, and I've said this before, I can't think of an industry that's invested less in leadership than technology.
Why?
Because, and again, we've talked about this, I believe most technology firms don't perceive that there is going to be a long window of their existence in front of them. So they are going to build to get bought, build to go public and have an exit in, you know, 10, 15 years, and that's it. They're not building for 100 years. So we're not seeing a big investment in leadership muscle like we do in other institutions.
Is that one of the things you think maybe we should keep an eye on to see if that thesis, if the current economic and coming out of COVID, if that maybe changes? Because even a 5% change in that view of company, 5% less companies working more towards an exit in the short term would have to create more long-term leadership development, right? Like that's at scale.
I do. I think it's a great call out, Shane. Yeah. I think it's something for us to keep on the radar. And for me, the Twitter is the really interesting Petri dish right now, is because what Elon's challenging is, does culture matter? Does an employer really have to care about employees or not? And can they still have a viable future? Because he's basically gone counter against the grain on everything that Harvard Business Review, all the business schools tell you, all the, you know, the, you know, great leadership, you know, authors out there, the Collins and Porus's and Tom Peters of the world. Like, this is what, how you do it, you know, treat people right. And what Gallup says about engagement, all that stuff. He's like, I don't give a crap. This is what we're going to do. And screw you if you don't like it, get out.
Yeah. So I have a couple thoughts on this. One is I look at it I don't think I'm on, like, I don't think I'm, if I'm, I'm probably sitting in the middle still of where I fall on how I feel about it. But I think it's interesting. You and I talk a lot about disruption, and you and I talk a lot about people looking at markets or looking at different things and challenging old ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. I think what he's gone on, and he's taken the Silicon Valley business model and applied it to leadership and said, okay, let's completely just cause absolute total chaos. I know you're a big fan of the success and positive things coming that can come out of chaos. So, you know, I think that's one piece to it. Like he's doing that. I think there's the piece that he's doing this at a company where he didn't build the culture. So I think that's why it sticks out, because there are certain people who, I'm not saying that Twitter or Elon Musk's world is a cult, but there are people who buy into cults and they think it's normal. They think this is how it's supposed to be and this is acceptable. Sure. Where someone on the outside may think, what about this seems like common sense? So there are people who are okay with, like, there are people who are okay with, they feel like this is him treating you good. Right. Like they, in their mind, they think this is normal. Really smart people, really successful people that think this is normal. So I think that's why it's been such a polarizing thing. Of it's like throwing like water on a grease fire. Right. Like there was already like things going on at Twitter. It wasn't like it was just ho hum, like everything's good. So I think it's interesting that that's happened. But, you know, what's going to come out of the chaos? You know, we've seen other people like now reference vaguely, oh, well, if Elon can do this, then other people can do it. Then if he's doing it, then maybe we can do that. Maybe we can do that. And I think from a we're talking leadership, I think there has to be a level of self-awareness to know who you are and know what you can deal with. You and I think we started the year off talking about some different stories where some leaders drew some really hard lines in the sand. And that didn't work because that wasn't who they were. Like they took a complete 180 from how they had built the company, and it didn't work. So I think it's really interesting to look and see all about how, what, like, because this, the world of leadership is also, leadership, there's more, I don't like using the word bad, but there's more subpar leaders than there are great leaders, right? So leadership to me is a very mimicked skill set in a lot of ways. A lot of people are trying to look and see what this person's done, and we see it, right? People want to, hey, what did Steve do at LinkedIn? I want to know, like, tell me, help me, like, tell me all the things you do. And you tell them all the time, like, I can't give you the answers. Like, you have to figure those things out. But like, people read books, people are always trying to follow somebody else. That's a concern that I have of, is this going to cause like blowback in other parts of companies, other companies? You know, people are going to see, people mimic things. So I'm just curious, you know, I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, there are a few, I think, real rookie moves that I've seen Elon and his team do. And what he's doing or what the people around him are doing, I don't know who owns what. And I'm also the first person to say, I don't know that I will bet against Elon. So it's not how I would be running it, but I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. Like, letting people go right around the holidays en masse, that's not something you do. Letting people go when they have H-1 visas and they got 30, 60, 90 days, they got to leave the country without giving them, like, because whenever we would let people go that are on H-1s, and when I was in the chair, you always give them a longer period to try to find another job, knowing there's kids, there's education, there's a whole bunch of, you know, challenges that are doing. So seeing some of that play, I was just kind of, that's kind of lame, you know, to feel like that's okay. Seeing him and Jamie Dimon, two very high profile leaders, walk back several decisions that they made thinking that they could get away with them. Everyone come back here and people say, no, we're not. And like, okay, well, maybe 2 days in the office isn't that bad if you tell us you're committed, right?
Yeah. So that specifically, I don't know that I've seen a whole lot of people articulate, and I think is a good piece to kind of peel back of making a decision, but not understanding. We call it reading the room in other parts of the world. Think about what they did. 12 months prior, Twitter, before Elon got there, 12 months prior, they said, work from anywhere you want to. And you and I have talked about this repeatedly, about how many people have exited the Silicon Valley world to go work somewhere else for lower property tax, for lower, you know, lower income tax, these different things. They had to have known that a large portion of these people didn't reside and no longer like lived near the building. They had to have known that, because it's clearly the case. So then it looks like you just asked a whole bunch of people to then turn around and do something that they actually can't even do. You telling me I have to be in the office. It's almost like you're just reacting.
Sorry.
And that kind of leads. Go ahead.
What you do when you behave like that, and I know it's pretty obvious to everyone who's listening, but I'm going to sort of take it down another notch so that people can really feel what's happening in the brains of employees when you see this. When you start letting people go in the holidays, you start being, you pay no respect to the fact that they may be on a visa. When you start changing the rules quickly, you're basically saying to them, we're not loyal to you at all, employee, and we're gonna do what we want when we want. And so the employee's like, why would I be loyal to you? Like, why would, if you're not going to give me any benefit of the doubt with how you're doing this, why would I give you any benefit of the doubt? And so you're further, I think causing what a lot of leaders that we talk to are really frustrated with, employees to take control of their own destiny versus trust leadership. You're just saying, we're going to do what we want when we want and screw you. And so that's really, I think, you know, how that plays out, I don't know, but we've seen so much of that. And I thought, wow, we're going to see the bar of leadership maturity, lessons learned, hopefully result in some wiser leaders. And we did see some, but man, we saw a whole lot more of people just hitting the panic button when things got a little dicey.
Do you think Elon making that decision, doesn't take away from a person's genius when I make the statement, but do you think him making that decision in part could have been him not truly believing the state of the shift of power in the labor force and where they're at and where we know they're at, then they're saying, no, you're not, like, we don't have to do that, right? Like, meaning this move may have worked 7 years ago in Silicon Valley, but now because they see the visibility and the landscape of other opportunities out there, he misunderstood that power shift is different and made a decision. And I think the one piece that doesn't, you know, I don't know, like, it's,
I'll tell you what I, and this is not something I read, which I believe is to be true. He's walking into Twitter. And again, I'm not going to bet against the guy. He's really, a rare person, but he's walking into a firm that doesn't have the aspirational, upside that colonizing the universe or changing the future of transportation has. Twitter's not that. And people are not there with the same cause. I'm sure the people loving Twitter that have been there. No, don't get me. And I know people, many of the early team, I did some work there in the early days. I love a lot of those people. But that's not the we're changing the world because of Twitter that I think Elon's other operations have. And he may not have appreciated that to the depth, you know, that. And I see that more as a miss on his part than psychology of the workforce has shifted, because he's not seeing that, I don't think, to the same degree at Tesla and at SpaceX, right?
Yeah. And the other piece, and certainly not to excuse any behavior or excuse not being fair to people and excuse those things, but the reality of it is while it's not all his money, he's certainly on the hook for a very large sum of cash that is there. And just like it's almost like making, like, what we're seeing is one of the world's smartest people reacting and making decisions as if we're an early stage startup and problems happened and this happened. It's like knee jerk reaction because of the pressure that's mounting. If anyone to not believe that he's under financial pressure for this, I think would be a miss, because he certainly is. Like, he's wealthy, but it's not like cash wealthy. Like, he doesn't have that all that money sitting around in cash. So it's a big deal. And I think that comes with a lot of pressure. And I think that's probably maybe a good segue into other pieces of the leadership of, I think what we know is the mental health and the stress that the last 3 or 4 years has put in an unbelievable way on leaders that, in a time maybe we've never seen in modern era, right? Like, we're not dealing with a world war and things like that, but maybe even worse. Maybe what we've gone through in the last 3 or 4 years is worse psychologically from a leadership standpoint.
Yeah, and I'm happy that we're pivoting, because I really, and you know this from some of our other conversations, I mean, I'm happy to talk about Elon, but he's an outlier, you know? Yeah. And yeah. I liked how you framed it earlier, which is, what are people going to learn, or what should they not learn, take away from something like that? Cause it's not a normal thing, but I do agree with you that, you know, the last 3 years we went from mental wellness was not even on the radar of a concern for most organizations. I really believe that. I mean, wellness was the fitness center. Yep. Now we're not just talking, well, we're talking mental wellness. And, I still think we're on the early frontiers. I mean, we're seeing, and we've done work with many firms that are trying to address this. And we're still in the early frontiers of how did we get here? What's this really about? And how do we shape an experience of work so that we're not unintentionally contributing to this dynamic? And again, you can't have this conversation without the life, family, home, work, frontier, because it's all together now. You can't separate those. It's all together. And that's hard, you know, because we've all been brought up with this model of they're different, they're separated. It's even just the term work-life balance. We talked about that in our language of work. It's just kind of broken. It's really, it's a combination now, you know? And so that's yet another frontier that, you know, that leaders are having to struggle with, that, you know, I don't want to push my people, but I have to push my people because I have fewer people and I can't hire as fast as I used to. So how am I going to get stuff done?
Yeah, I think for you and I, maybe one of the things we can look out for, or maybe to look for, I believe, I won't speak for you, but I believe that in order for mental wellness to become quote unquote mainstream, whether mainstream in an industry, mainstream in society, or mainstream just within an organization, it starts at the top, right? So the most vulnerable, most visible person has to say and like live it. Like you have to like say like, we're going through something. I'm going through something. You're going through something. We need to address this. There's days I'm not my best self and I need to bring this to awareness.
Yeah.
But again, that's, I think maybe the hard, would you agree that the hardest thing for any publicly traded CEO or any leader really is to admit that they have like this, like I got some shit going on. Like I'm not in a good space, right? Like to say that, because society tells us, well, we're just going to replace you. Like, oh, you can't, like mentally, you can't take this. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah. So I think maybe what we see in 2023 is we see some like big name. And I don't mean big name as in like the normal players that we see of like the tech world. I mean, like some people come out and start to show that vulnerability and that empathy towards, hey, we're still going through that. We're being tossed around in this washing machine still. Like, mm-hmm. It's okay. And let's start having those conversations and start talking about those things. Mm-hmm. I just think that's maybe something, maybe we'll see a trend of one or two outliers start to.
It does feel like in the world of athletics, there's many athletes, Simone Biles, who's the big swimmer,
Michael Phelps. Serena Williams.
Serena Williams. The other woman, the Japanese tennis player,
Naomi Osaka.
They're like, yeah, no, it. I don't think, you know, this pressure is making me the best version of myself, whatever that is, you know, and that is very new. That's really new, and that's recent, and that kind of is media related, you know. And this gets into another realm, Shane, that I think we don't talk about a lot, which is we know more about each other as coworkers. We know more about our leaders than ever before. Like it used to be prior to the internet and social media, I just kind of know you in the context of when I see you and interact with you and what other people say. But now I'm seeing probably how you're voting, probably how you're investing, probably how you're spending your time, what you're liking and what you're disliking. And I'm armed with a whole bunch of new stuff now, and I'm not sure how to make sense of all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very complicated. And we're just on the new, that's a whole new frontier of awareness that I think contributes to the, you know, this whole push for, I see in the world of people to try to simplify things. That's bad. That's good.
Yeah.
Versus, well, it's not so easy. You know, the world, we live in a world of gray and people want it, you know, white or black. Yeah.
Yeah, if a person says something off color, why rather than we should do this? This is just a societal thing, not even in the place of work. But we shouldn't react, and we should say, "Okay, that's not how that person normally says something to me."
Right?
What's going on there? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, and rather than saying, "I cannot believe he just said he supported this guy," and this guy just went and said all these really offensive things to my aunt that because of who she is and I'm offended, right? Well, let's go actually see what is the problem. Doesn't excuse those things, but it's saying, hey, like we should ask more questions rather than react in those moments. And it's, you're right, we have this view. So like, how do you, so which, man, I did, it goes back to the leadership piece and like the things you got to do now. Like, okay, you certainly don't have to dive into any of it, but there's been different life, really like major life changes and events happened to you while you were in leadership, right? I would argue that maybe only a few of them, most of the people that you like oversaw really knew kind of what was going on, right? Maybe they didn't know it all, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to kind of have to keep that in when there's not like this complete transparency that exists now, of now where everybody knows everything, but I'm still walking around as if I'm okay, right? Or I'm, you know, we just saw the two news anchors where they were clearly openly dating internally, but because it publicly comes out and they're now both getting divorced and now together, now all of a sudden we've got an issue with it. Now all of a sudden it's a problem when the people around them didn't have a problem with it. So it's these things that we have access to. And it's like you said, like, how do we process this information? You shared with me a video of Tom Izzo coaching, and he talked about from a leadership standpoint of like kids are transferring. I say kids, young men, young women are transferring, changing schools. They're job hopping athletic departments is essentially what they're doing, right? We're having the great resignation hit the athletic departments. I have a whole new idea now of something I want to try and pitch to some athletic departments because of this now that I'm saying this out loud. But it's this world of like, how do we wrap our heads around now all of a sudden everybody's got all this information, right? And what do we do with it, right? What are you supposed to do with it? What are you supposed to do with it as a leader?
Yeah, right? Yeah. I feel like I'm starting to, you know, as we're having this conversation, I'm listening to you and I'm piecing together the last 3 weeks. I was in Toronto, Calgary, Paris, Nashville, Monterey, Mexico. And I'm absorbing whenever this is why I love what we do is we get to really listen and share and learn and teach. But one of the things that I feel that is starting to surface is just this growing agitation with probably things aren't going back to the way they were. And I've been saying it's not going to happen, but now it's not a, okay, I got it. I got to have a strategy. It's a frustration. It's an angst. It's a disappointment that we're not going back to that. And you know, maybe it's the stages of change that, they teach you when you go to get a master's in organizational development, which is, you know, I think it's a Bridges changes model, which is, you know, anger, denial, rejection, acceptance, or forming, storming, norming, and performing in different stages of teams. So, but in the change process, people sort of reject it, deny it. Then they sort of, you know, acquiesce a little bit, and then they start to say, okay, I get it. And then they start to, you know, get with the program. And I feel we're still in that moving out of rejection into more like, okay, I don't like this, but I'm going to have to figure this out. And what I'm starting to try to move from and where I want to sort of lead the conversation we're having now is the conversation I'm having with other leaders, which is, I think we need to start sharing examples of models, new models that are working, instead of shooting all the ones that are broken and messed up and jacked up, because we have a whole, there's plenty of things that are not right. We need more reasons to believe. We need more examples of who's doing it a new way and learning. You know, one of the companies that I have just enormous respect for that is just gone all in on experimentation is Unilever in the UK. And I would love for us to try to get some folks from there to say, like, how did you guys get this big monster consumer goods global company to get it? And, you know, I had an epiphany last night when I was thinking about this, like, why is Unilever figuring it out? And I think they're figuring it out because their purpose is to make the consumer life better. And what natural chemistry it is to, well, if that's our purpose outside, that should be our purpose inside. Lives of our employees should be better, not just with the, you know, fragrances and deodorants and toilet papers and toothpaste, but with their mental wellness, right? And that's, you know, when I see companies marry their what's our purpose with how we should be treating the employees in a real meaningful way, I think that's where we're probably going to see adoption happen sooner. And so I'm both encouraged and challenged that I think we're hopefully at that people are expressing the frustration moment by and large and recognizing we're not going back to whatever that comfortable place was where you were 3 years ago. Mm-mm. stock coming back.
Yeah, it's almost like you're in there's a TV show I watched on Netflix, and there was a lot of seasons, and it was these people who got put into outer space and they were hibernating essentially, and then they woke up and then they went on these different planets, and it's like you have to learn, like, you're not going back to, like, right. Earth isn't what you, like, Earth isn't it. It's not the answer, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's the extreme. But so taking this back into the leadership conversation, that's a tough pill to swallow for people who have felt in these things that we talk about wellness, who've had that psychological safety, who's had that, you know, environmental safety of my people are here, my teams are here, my leaders are here, the meetings are happening here. I can pop in on a meeting if I want to. I can walk by and see a meeting's happening, and I can pop in and I can be a fly on the wall and add value. I know, and I'm speaking from a leadership standpoint, they're saying, I know I can do my job if it was like it was. And now all of a sudden it's kind of coming into a reality of, like, it's kind of like when you're dating that first boy or girl, and that first breakup's kind of happening, and you're like, uh-oh, something mm-hmm. doesn't feel right. I think, she's not handing me notes anymore in science class. What's going on? And then now all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a second. This yeah. isn't going back to, like, what I thought it was going to go back to. Right. And then you relearn, yeah. right. And you relearn right. and you adapt.
It's almost like, Shane, I feel like, you know, I had this shoulder surgery. I'm having to do everything left-handed right now. I feel like we are having to become ambidextrous. Like, imagine you became a leader with your right arm, and now your right arm's incapacitated. I'm going to have to create value with my other arm. Like, or let's say Messi, who, you know, in the world, he's like the greatest left-footed football player, arguably in history. Something happens, and now he's got to learn. How frustrating is that going to be? But that's where we're at right now. We're all having to use a different foot, a different hand, and it's not comfortable, right? It's not comfortable. But the other foot and the other hand is just not going to serve us right now. You know?
Yeah. No. It's funny you say that. It's almost like not only being ambidextrous, but it's also now you may actually need a third arm. Right. To do what you know, like you may need a third arm to do what needs to be done. Like it's, you know, people often ask, and I know it comes from a place of concern and desperation and fear, but everybody asks, like, Steve, this is great. You just scared the daylights out of me. Oh my gosh. I realize we've got a lot of work to do. What do we do to fix it? Right. Like, what's the answer to fix it? Mm-hmm. And the reality of, like, you know, you say it, like, there is no benchmark, right? So this is that thing of, I have a story in your world that I don't want to use, but it's like somebody who wakes up and they've, you know, have to relearn to walk again, right? Or mm-hmm. they have to do these different things. They're like, you know, the football player who goes and gets a neck injury, and then now all of a sudden he's got to relearn how to do these things. We have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's a really difficult place for a lot of people to operate in it because of the trauma of my life at a young age. I'm good. Like, I could walk in my house tomorrow and my wife decides she left me and they've packed up and rolled out. I'm going to sit down and, like, well, I'll tend to that, but I still got work to do and I still got to go on with my life and I still got to move. So I think you've called it something like career security, like I forgot how you worded it, but in that of, as a leader, how do we get to this place of psychologically? Because almost like it's like we talked about admitting that you have, like, some mental health stuff going on, or you're not in a good place. Admitting that you're not comfortable with where things are and things are going to be unbelievably different is vulnerable, and your board may say, nope. No, we don't believe that. We're old school. We don't believe that. We're not seeing that. You're wrong. You're out. We've created a world where leadership can't be sincere, and they can't mm-hmm. be vulnerable, and they can't be honest and transparent. And yeah, I wonder how that plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the longer we go here, the more optimistic I am that The old patterns are not going to return because they can't return, you know? And, but we're seeing things play out again, like this whole FTX thing, which is super interesting to me on many, many levels, is how, you know, how far someone could go, like with Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, like how far, how many people could get behind it and want to believe. There's so much money behind it. It's almost like unstoppable. And now how much money got in the pot with no regulatory insurance at all. And now it's just poof. I don't know where it is. And apparently he doesn't know where it is either. But like, how does that, like, we kind of learned before that a lot of these tech companies in the dot-com bubble, like there is no pathway to profitability. Like, why are you all jumping in here? Yeah. And we're humans, so we're destined to make some of the same mistakes again. But yeah, it's really surprising on one level that we're still making the same mistakes.
I've got a local friend here who is a founder of a pretty good sized VC firm, and I asked him about this one day at the gym, and I said, this came up when it first happened, like the news was happening, and we were in there talking about it. I was like, "What in this?" And he was like, "You would be surprised. You would be surprised because how many in the startup world, like angel, seed money, Series A, all through those levels, you have a board, but you don't really have a board. It's kind of like, why are we meeting? This is slowing. Like, we don't need to meet. Yeah. Like, if things are going good, why are we meeting? Mm-hmm. Right? So what is the benchmark for companies in this world, right? It's, are we continuing to grow? Is our revenue continuing to grow? Are we making more money? Are we raising more money? If we can do those things, those are really the KPIs of external success, right? So they say, like what he was saying is, so you get in this pattern of comfort and like, it's like, hey, okay, well, things have been going good. Like, keep doing your thing. Like, oh, you just raised $1 billion. Awesome. You got some really smart people to invest in. Like, keep doing your thing. Keep going. And it's like ignorance is bliss. Almost, right?
It's like, if they thought it was good and they invested, well, they're smart people. They wouldn't have done it unless there's substance here, right? Yeah. And
right, because of fear, right? So this goes back to the whole leadership thing of, it's almost like we're creating a culture. We've created a culture in leadership of fear keeping people from reacting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to go make this decision and maybe I think everybody should be back in the office, but I'm scared to say that because I'm afraid people will quit, or vice versa. Or in the VC world, I mean, you're in the epicenter of it, right? No one wants to miss out on deal flow. Everybody has those conversations when they're all sitting around and say, oh yeah, I turned down. I could have been, you know, on the original term sheet for Uber. I could have been on the original term sheet for this, and they've missed out, and it's a huge miss. So it's what's the loss versus the reward of jumping in. And yeah, like, who wants to say, nah, guys, I think before we take this $1.5 billion that we just sold everybody and said, hey, we're the greatest thing on earth, maybe we should put some compliance in place, right? Like, maybe we should put some auditors and some actuaries right in the office
for our security. So yeah, we don't go to jail.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, maybe we should do that, yeah, right? Oh, right. No, we're not going to do that. Okay, so it's like, because who wants, maybe that embarrassment of, well, oh, you don't believe? Oh, you don't trust us? Like, you know, oh, you don't, like, now all of a sudden you're the outsider. And so it's this failure to move based off of fear is, it's a scary place. It's a bad place to be in as a leader. You know, it's kind of like being a parent, right? It's like,
yeah.
You know, you fail to react and it can cost you, right? Sometimes you got to make split second decisions. So,
yeah. Yeah. Leadership on one level that, you know, where we sit today, you know, the end of the year, 2022, you know, I feel, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about here is, we are seeing more experiments. We're seeing more people trying new things, having to find new ways of creating value. I really hope, maybe this is, you know, our next episode, if we get another one or two in before the end of the year, like, what do you think is going to happen next year will be really interesting. And
yeah,
love to hear from the audience around what people are seeing there. I went into this year and I'm leaving the year feeling stronger about what I said we need to do, and that is, you know, build stronger human bonds, learn, and you touched on it earlier, which is, you know, whether it's courageous conversations or learning to talk about the hard stuff and appreciating, like expecting the hard stuff to come. That's what got to play for, not to avoid it, not to find a market that's not going to be unstable, but to sort of say, okay, the more we learn to deal with crazy and chaos, man, the more we can handle anything that comes our way. So let's get people here that can handle that and figure out what kind of model that needs to be, you know?
So this is a skill set that you're predicting that needs to be somehow assessed and people should look for in hiring leadership and non-leadership and every, you know, everyday contributors. You're saying that how can we start gauging a person's, we talk a lot about learning velocity, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do we gauge somebody's chaos capacity, right? What's a person's chaos capacity and how much can you handle, right? Because
I think that is going to be the narrative. I mean, your adaptability index is going to be a measured trait for sure in 23. And there are some firms that we've talked to that are looking to do this, that they've got tests and role plays and models to put people through to sort of to gauge it. But that gets into everything. Like I'm starting to have more and more people come to me frustrated with the educational, you know, institutions as they've been, you know, built. And I'm saying, hey, don't get frustrated there, because we all gotta fix every part of preparing people for the future. But I don't know that it's a what in terms of education as much as a how. How are we teaching? Are we getting people are we grazing curiosity, or are we suffocating curiosity? Are we trying to run to the shortcut, FTX? Are we trying to look for a quick win? Or are we looking at, like Tom Izzo is like, hey, we need people to be okay sticking around and failing and not having everything work out instead of chasing the gold ring all the time. But the challenge for Tom Izzo is the pathway to chase the ring is easier than it's ever been, you know?
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Oh, no, stick around here and you're going to sit the bench and maybe get some more playing time next year, or go over there and you'd be guaranteed more playing time. And Tom Izzo, by the way, how do you know that that move isn't going to be beneficial for that person? You know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
And then there's so many things. It's the same way in the workforce, right? You can see somebody leaving. I'm sure you had people that would come to you and say, Steve, I think I'm going to put in my notice. I'm going to go over here and work. Even though you can see a clear path to them having massive success next to you here at LinkedIn and then go off. I'm sure that happened. I'm sure people saw the grass was greener and when you talk about it, right? And they go and they're like, whoa, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Or, you know, the climate wasn't just right for that crop to grow. Right. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes the climate has to be, it's kind of like wine, right? Like a couple degrees off for so many days and the whole crop of wine goes bad. So, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And, it's a great, another great episode. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much we could talk about, but let's put a bow on this one and wish our listeners, we'll thank our listeners also for staying with us here and looking forward to building some more compelling shows for next season.
Absolutely. That's a wrap on another episode of the Workweek After Hours. I'm Shane Howard with
Steve Cadigan.
Cheers.